The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Darlings, and welcome to Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Allworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you have any news for us this evening?
I sure do. So, first off, as listeners probably heard from news other than Radio Wasteland, last week India and Pakistan got into a dispute over Kashmir when Pakistan shot down an Indian pilot after India bombed militants in Pakistan. And the world held its breath because it looked like there was a possibility of full-on war for about 3 days. And together, the nations have about 300 nuclear warheads pointed at each other. So the pilot has been returned, and things are cooling off, but I just thought we'd acknowledge how close we came to a nuclear exchange, potentially the closest since the Cold War. The West Virginia community of Flatwoods is enjoying a large resurgence of tourism after a History Channel series, a video game, and a documentary showcased the Flatwoods monster sighting from 1952. On that fateful day, two brothers spotted a bright object flash across the sky and land nearby. They and a few other residents of the area went to investigate and encountered a bizarre creature with, quote, small claw-like hands, and a head that, quote, resembled an ace of spades. The local Flatwoods Monster Museum reports visitors from 27 states and several other countries. So, good to see the lesser-known cryptids getting some love. And in mind control news, researchers at Zhejiang University in China have used brain-to-brain communication to allow a human to guide a rat through a complex maze using only their thoughts. The non-invasive system consists of an EEG machine that records human brain data and transmits it wirelessly to electrodes implanted inside rats. Describing their accomplishment, the scientist said, quote, our manipulators were able to mind control a rat cyborg to smoothly complete maze navigation tasks. They went on to say, computer-assisted brain-to-brain interface that transmits information between two entities is intriguingly possible. Of course, the rats made the researchers say that. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right. So, cyborg rat, you know, I'm a sucker for this. But I gotta wonder, because they're saying that, like, hey, it's possible. Hey, this is doable. This might
sure.
happen. But really, I gotta wonder if this is more of a level of one-way mind communication and behavioralism than it is conveying an idea. Because, like, how do we convey it to rat speak? You know, like, if I get in there and I think left and it sort of shocks them left a little bit, you know, that seems maybe more realistic than I think left and the rat goes, oh, yeah, left. I know what left is. I mean,
right.
Are rats, like, left clawed or right clawed? I mean, do they know?
We don't really know yet what's going on in the brains of rats that this is happening to. But it is worth noting that this is just the latest in a long line of similar technologies like that. A few years ago, researchers were able to transmit an image from the brain of one human to another.
Oh, crazy.
Wirelessly.
And I know a couple of months ago, probably at this point, you were talking about reading thought patterns and turning them into words so that you could actually tell what a person was thinking based off of parts of the brain that highlight and that represent
right, that's
words.
Being used yeah. with people who have, like, locked-in syndrome. And
yeah.
They're almost totally paralyzed, but you put an EEG net on their brain and,
right.
you know, it allows them to send simple messages.
Right, and don't get me wrong, I find all this amazing. The part
yeah.
that I have a hard time wrapping my brain around is the translation from human to rat.
Human to rat, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's, I think even the researchers probably don't really know how that's working. But
I imagine in my head they're not sitting there thinking turn left. It's more like they're like a 9-year-old kid playing Super Mario Brothers who's like licking all around their mouth with the paddle leaning way far to the left as they turn to the left. You know how back, you might be too young to remember, but back in the day, man, you always had that kid who was all like sweaty and he'd be playing the game. And every time he like tried to go to the left, he'd move his whole body to the left and bend the controller as though that would make him get there faster, which now I guess in the Wii it might. But
I think I learned more from that question than you're likely to learn from any answer I could ever give.
All right. That's wisdom. Wisdom is the intelligence that only comes with age. And I apparently have some when it comes to the original Nintendo system.
I can't argue with that.
And then no. I'm a little desensitized. You know, this India-Pakistan thing, I couldn't tell if it was being overly sensationalized. I mean, I get that they were pissed at one another, but nothing in the news that I was following really was conveying that that they were threatening to shoot nuclear missiles at one another.
No, they weren't, but they were threatening to go to war.
Were they?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
And they both have nuclear missiles.
Right.
So it's not hard to imagine.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, nuclear.
So let's go to war, but ixnay on the nuclear missiles, okay?
I bet you that would happen. I bet you if we went to war with somebody, that probably would happen, that people would both refuse to use nuclear weapons. For one, let's say India and Pakistan went to war with one another, and Pakistan said, okay, well, we're going to nuke India.
Sure.
They might fire that first nuclear weapon, and basically the entirety of the free world would rain hellfire on them for doing it. So it's like that choice.
Yeah, that's more than possible.
That choice would be much worse than whatever could possibly come out of it. You know, you would have to be a mad leader or something like that. And, you know, I realize that there's a lot of madmen in Pakistan specifically, but their government is a little more down the lines of India, a little more.
Oh, I agree. I think both governments are fairly rational.
Yeah.
But I also think when a war goes on for a little while, rationality tends to go out the window, even if at the highest levels.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, and there's some
look at some of the decisions we made during any number of wars in our history, Vietnam, World War II, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. But nuking your neighbor's backyard that's connected to your backyard seems pretty
well, it doesn't make sense to us.
I can understand nuking somebody on the other side of the planet. I mean, go ahead, you know. But I mean, your neighbor. I mean, come on. I mean, seriously, you gotta grow your food there.
I guess I didn't think of it that way.
I don't know. But, yeah, it is a little terrifying that we all have these nukes, but I understand that they're not going anywhere. And, you know,
yeah, unfortunately.
All right, so our guest tonight is a little bit anonymous. Sherlock Holmes is the pseudonym. I want to say his pseudonym, but as we discussed in our upcoming segment
last
time, I actually don't know if we're dealing with a man or a woman.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I just don't know. I'm assuming Sherlock
male,
is a man.
Female or those who lieth betwixt.
Totally. You know, maybe he'll get on there and I don't know. Maybe it'll be a...
It will be Bigfoot, clearing Bigfoot's name.
Yeah, totally. Oh, I didn't do this. Yeah, totally. So
sorry, Sherlock.
We're going to be talking about the Dennis Lloyd Martin case, a case of a missing kid who was born in 62 and went missing in 69, 6 days shy of his 7th birthday in the Smoky Mountains National Park in Tennessee. And this is our first move into some true crime, so I'm really interested in this. I know my wife's at home listening because true crime is her gig.
That's her thing. I know.
That's her
jam.
And I have a feeling our own Melandria is at home listening as well.
Also her jam.
All right. So you are listening to Radio Wasteland. When we come back, we have our guest Sherlock Holmes talking about the Dennis Lloyd Martin missing case.
Yeah. gun laws continue to tighten up across the country, Bastiani Arms will continue to provide our community with quality firearms, hard-to-find ammo, off-list fully built AR lower receivers, and the absolute best customer service. Get out of the grab-and-go box stores and come talk to a knowledgeable firearms specialist. The good guys at Bastiani Arms are real gun enthusiasts with two full-time gunsmiths on hand 5 days a week. Right now, Bastiani Arms is stocked up on hard-to-find ammo, 30-30, 38 Special, and 44 Magnum. More people than ever are exercising their rights to conceal and carry a firearm. Seth Stoke has over 20 years' experience in firearms and offers CCW classes, women-only CCW classes, and hunter education. Bastiani Arms has everything you need for firearms, and they appreciate you shopping local. Bastiani Arms, on the corner of Larkspur Lane and Wall Street in Reading. Join the revolution.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney of Shasta Gas Propane. Our company motto is, our customers are warm friends. We are demonstrating our commitment to this motto by helping those in our area that lost their homes in the car fire and are moving onto their property in an RV during the rebuilding process. We can hook up a 120-gallon propane tank to your RV gas system and deliver gas to your property so you won't have to disconnect your 7-gallon cylinder and take it somewhere to get it filled, then reconnect it and relight your pilots. We will deliver and connect the tank at no charge, then discount the price of the propane. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793. We want to help you during this stressful time.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Sherlock Holmes, and we're talking about the Dennis Lloyd Martin case. Sherlock, are you there with us?
I am. How are you?
Not bad. How are you doing this evening?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for asking.
All right, so I was kind of hoping that we could just hop right into it. You know, this is our first true crime case, and it's really interesting for it, but I think a big part of these true crime cases is to find out about the actual crime, like, right off the bat. So I was kind of hoping that you could sort of maybe walk us through what we do know about what happened to Dennis Lloyd Martin and when that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Dennis Lloyd Martin was, he was a 6-year-old. He was actually 6 days shy of his 7th birthday. And on June 14th, 1969, him, his brother, and grandfather, going out to, the Great Smoky Mountains National Park for a Father's Day weekend trip. They had done it before. And this was supposed to be no different, really. They went up there, and on the 14th, the day before that, actually, they had met with another family, another Martin family, and they were from Huntsville, Alabama. And the Martin family with Dennis's family was from Tennessee, the Knoxville area, if I remember correctly. But a lot of people try to draw a weird conspiracy theory out of the two Martin families meeting together. Thought it was odd. It's just one of those coincidences, really. But on the 14th, four of the boys, two, one being Dennis and his brother, the other family's two boys, the other Martin family's two boys, decided to play a trick on the adults. And they were in Spence Field at the time. And they wanted to basically run up on the adults and try to scare them. So Dennis, he was wearing a red shirt, and the boys thought that, you know, he would probably give away them coming, so they wanted him to go around the other side and come out and scare them. And the adults knew they were going to do this, so they just kind of played along with it. And they scared him, I guess you'd say, even though they knew it was going to happen. And Dennis somehow in the 3 to 5 minutes after that happened, he ended up getting lost, and nobody's ever seen him since. And his story's been kind of misconstrued over the years in terms of making it a paranormal case and so on, which I really don't think that it is. I don't really think a crime has been committed here. It's just this is a missing boy. And his story has been kind of hijacked by a certain community of people, I guess.
Yeah. So in their looking into it, did they, you know, cause all the possibilities are that, you know, an adult took the child. The child was lost. Maybe the other kids did something to the child and didn't fess up to it. You know, were all of these things looked into by the police at the time? And if so, were they looked into credibly?
Yeah, they were. I mean, this case is a prime example of when people go into, if they're employed by a National Park Service or whatnot, and they're trained in search and rescue, this case is day one in training, because it's a perfect example of what not to do when something like this happens. There's an old saying, and I'm sure you've heard it, you work smarter, not harder. And in the days preceding, or the days after he ended up going missing, they flooded the entire national park with people. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people. And it really hampered the search efforts for him, because there's a searcher that has done a lot of interviews, Dwight McCarter. He's actually helped find a lot of missing people in the forests and national parks and so on. And when you get that many people involved in the search, you go over vital clues like, you know, footprints or so on. And it's basically an example of what not to do. So they go over this case. But, you know, there's a lot of stories like on my blog. You know, I kind of go after it. There's a lot of Bigfoot conspiracies, and that basically comes from the Key sighting. There's another family. It was about 7 miles away at another part of the park. His name was Harold Key and his family. And, he didn't remember exactly the exact time that, he saw this, but him and his family were walking. And they heard what they said was an enormous, sickening scream. And in some reports, they said they even thought they heard a child scream. But they said they heard it, and a few minutes later, they said they walked about 200 yards later. Sorry, 200 yards further after they heard the scream, and then they saw what they described. His kids were with him at the time. They said they thought they saw a bear. And he said that it wasn't a bear. It looked like it was a very rough-looking, unkempt-looking man that was kind of moving stealthily in the woods to try to prevent people from seeing him. And he said at the time he thought it was a moonshiner. But he said he was obviously hiding. He was definitely trying to avoid them seeing him. And that was one thing. He came forward a couple of days after, because at the time didn't know Dennis was missing. And he said it bothered him after he heard about it, so he came forward. But there was no specific time that he remembered when he heard it, so it may not have had anything to do with Dennis. But a lot of people have, I know David Paulides, he mentions it a lot. But at no time, a lot of people have said that the unkempt man or whatever, wild man or whatever, was carrying something over his shoulder. But if you go to my blog and read that entry, at no time in any of the newspaper articles that I've posted there does it say that they saw a wild man carrying anything over his shoulder. That's something that's been added over the years, unfortunately.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of embellishment added to these things as time goes on.
Oh, a lot, yeah. There's a whole lot of them, unfortunately. But they had the FBI come in, and they kind of went over every possible scenario. They had even some psychics that throw their two cents in. Everything that they investigated, didn't seem like there was no really crime that was committed, in my opinion. I know that the Martin family wanted to leave the possibility open that Dennis may have been kidnapped, but they said that at the same time there was no evidence of that being of that taking place either. So they left it open to interpretation. But
I'm sure as time goes on that the parents, as terrifying as kidnapping may be, as time goes on, if there is no kidnapping, it does leave parents thinking the worst, and at that point, kidnapping probably starts to sound even a little better because it means they might possibly be alive.
Absolutely. Yeah. I could imagine that would probably be the case. They at least want to know that their, missing child was with somebody and they weren't alone in the forest by themselves,
Yeah, I often think about this with parents of missing kids. I have kids myself, and is it better to know that they died, or is it better to know that they might be out there somewhere? I often watch these things and listen to these things, and I wonder which would be better for the parent. True closure or
telling,
no closure.
You never know.
Yeah, I guess different people react different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I've got kids myself. I can't put myself in that situation. I guess I would, not being in that situation, I personally right now would say I'd want to know, but, you never know until you're in that situation yourself.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I feel that in the moment I would want to know, but like 10 years down the line, I would want to live the lie that maybe they ran off and were living in France now. Something. Yeah. You'd want to think something, as time goes on. We have a lot of different thoughts and different feelings as time goes on. All right, so Sherlock, we're coming up on break here. If you'd like to know more about Sherlock Holmes and his website, it's crimeblogger1983.blogspot.com. And there are a lot of cases represented on this site. We're just talking about one of them, the Dennis Lloyd Martin case. And you're listening to Radio Wasteland with our guest Sherlock Holmes. So come on back.
I see a river and a shooting in black. No colors anymore, I want them to turn black. I see the goods of life is in this summer cold. I have to turn my head until my darkness goes. I see a line of cars and they're all painted black.
Attention all hands. Manning the Watch is a show by veterans for veterans covering every branch of the uniformed service.
Listen every Saturday at 10 a.m. for the news and information all veterans need to know nationally and right here in Shasta County.
Listen live or streaming on the chat room at KCNR1460.com. Welcome aboard every Saturday morning for Manning the Watch, 10 a.m. on KCNR.
Almost 50% of people in Shasta County have prediabetes, but only 1 in 10 know they have it. The good news is, prediabetes can be reversible with lifestyle and diet changes. The Shasta Family YMCA is offering a new program that is recognized by the CDC to improve your health and reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes. If you desire long-term healthy change in the new year, the YMCA can help. Go to sfymca.org for the diabetes prevention program information or call the YMCA at 768-2185.
Learning is fun at Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Join us every Thursday at 10 a.m. for Little Explorers, a hands-on learning program for children ages 2 to 5. Stories, crafts, and so much more. There's a new theme every month. Looking for something fun to do on the weekend? In addition to ongoing exhibits, Turtle Bay offers family and science programs every second and third Saturday each month, included with admission and always free for members. Don't miss out. Visit turtlebay.org for more information.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need to get treated, not seated. Shasta Regional Medical Center is located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading. They have emergency room doctors and staff that guarantee you will be seen by a medical professional within 30 minutes of your arrival. Shasta Regional Medical Center believes in delivering patient-centered health care with compassion and respect for every patient and their family.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon to 2.
Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than the mainstream media soundbites.
Here on KCNR 1460 AM, we've got the experts on politics, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, property rights, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
The archives are always available online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join Aaron and Bill this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. We the People, brought to you by Team Power of Shasta Lake, your local Kubota and John Deere dealer. Call them at 530-226-9226. We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
As gun laws continue to tighten up across the country, Bastiani Arms will continue to provide our community with quality firearms, hard-to-find ammo, off-list fully built AR lower receivers, and the absolute best customer service. Get out of the grab-and-go box stores and come talk to a knowledgeable firearm specialist. The good guys at Bastiani Arms are real gun enthusiasts with two full-time gunsmiths on hand 5 days a week. Right now, Bastiani Arms is stocked up on hard-to-find fine ammo, 30-30, 38 Special, and 44 Magnum. More people than ever are exercising their rights to conceal and carry a firearm. Seth Stoke has over 20 years' experience in firearms and offers CCW classes, women-only CCW classes, and hunter education. Bastiani Arms has everything you need for firearms, and they appreciate you shopping local. Bastiani Arms, on the corner of Larkspur Lane of Wall Street in Reading. Join the revolution.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Sherlock Holmes. We're talking about the missing Dennis Lloyd Martin case from 1969. So, Sherlock, I guess I got to ask you, not that it's a problem, but why the anonymity with your name?
My blog's a little different. I guess you'd say I like picking fights with bad people.
I see.
But that's a big reason. But when I listened to the promo the other day, you're right. The beginning, the first reason was to bring more of a spotlight on the case itself and not myself. I'm not a person that wants to bring attention to me. I want to analyze the case from a different perspective. And at the same time, if I know that a person's responsible for another missing person, I go after that person.
Right. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense because, you know, people out there might make the argument, well, you have the fake name and you got the website and people are going to look that up. But what they're maybe not putting together is when you do look that up, all you get is the results of case searches. You don't get any finding out about your life and pictures of your family and following your Facebook and doing all the stuff that people do now. It really does
right.
focus everything onto the cases, and that makes a lot of sense.
That's my main reason. And again, I'm really opinionated on my blog, so a lot of the cases that feature that I have suspects that I know that are responsible, I will call them out. And they know that.
I sometimes wish I had done that for this show. I don't really have that luxury now. I have to be somewhat diplomatic. All right. So, you know, I wanted to talk about, like, in your looking into this case, what were some of the possibilities? You know, it's like surely they looked into, you know, how does a kid go missing so incredibly quickly in such a short amount of time? We're looking at, from the explanation of the case, we're looking at like 10 minutes, 15 minutes tops, and then all of a sudden this kid can't be found. So, you know, my thoughts are like he fell in a hole or that, you know, some sort of animal took off with him or something. You know, did anybody really sort of, I assume that they looked into holes and chasms and little stuff in the area and they looked at the possible wildlife in the air. All that was looked into?
Oh, yeah. They looked in sewage drainages and rivers and creeks, and they even checked animal feces and, to see if he had accidentally came up on a bobcat or a bear, which are real common in that area. But they did come across on day three, they did come across some footprints that matched the type of shoes that Dennis was wearing. And this was several miles away. And they were in a pattern of one shoe on and one shoe off, which makes me think that he may have sprained his foot or something. And he was, as one of his feet may have swollen, and he took the shoe off to try to relieve the swelling. Or, I mean, he could have just lost a shoe, one of those two. And the real strange thing is that they just disregarded it because they said that it was probably tracked by some of the search members out in the woods, but there were no kids with any of the search members. So
it was that one tiny little search member with only one shoe on with a 7-year-old size foot.
I guess they had a bunch of midgets out there helping search, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's... they disregarded it. I don't know why, but that was the only thing they really found while searching for him initially.
Yeah, that's you know, it's interesting because we've had you scheduled to come on the show here for a little while, and then here in California just recently, those two girls had gone missing for several days. So this kind of gave me a week here where I was really thinking about this topic and how it can be so hard to find them. And it's very sort of confusing to me, especially today with the technology that we have. I guess they had a Black Hawk helicopter out there. You know, you wouldn't think it'd be so hard to find a child who went missing in such a small area, because it's not like, I mean, I know it's a big area, but I mean, you know, it's not like they took off sprinting into the wilderness as far and fast as they could. I mean, they're not a marathon runner. You know, so really, I'm just really surprised, like, what is it that makes it so hard to find these people in these situations?
Well, I went, this is a personal story. I went camping with my grandparents when I was about Dennis's age. We went to Lake Texoma, and I went, I don't remember what I was doing, but I went, we had this little RV we were staying in. And there's a bunch of other RVs around too. And I went out of the RV to go get something. And I turned around, and for a split second, all the other RVs looked exactly the same. And I panicked almost. And I almost wanted to start sprinting around to try to find my grandparents one. But I think you could become real disoriented real quick, and I think you can get into a mode to where you're just scared. You feel like you need to run. I felt like that when I was his age, and that was, and I wasn't anywhere near in a situation like Dennis was in. And a lot of the interviews I have on my blog with White McCarter, he was one of the searchers. He wrote a book about cases and times that he searched for people like Dennis, and he ended up finding a lot of them. But Dennis was his first search, and of course they didn't find him. But a lot of the times the kid or the, especially if it's a little kid, he'll hide from people trying to search for him.
Yeah, that's one of the things that crossed my mind.
One story McCarter was telling, he said that he went over this area, I think it was like 3 to 4 times, and he knew the kid was in this area, and he kept calling his name. And he's like, around the 4th time he approached that area, he saw the kid hiding in a little cave, a little dwelling somewhere, and the kid was scared. So a lot of the times, you know, they get into a panic mode and they get scared, and if they don't hear a familiar voice, they're not coming out.
I see. That definitely makes a lot of sense. All right, so, you know, I got a couple of the paranormal questions to go along with this. You know, you had mentioned that they actually brought in a few psychics. I'm curious, as do we know what any of those psychics said they thought happened?
They thought that he had fell into, you know, a hole in the ground. Unfortunately, a lot of the searches, a lot of the parties ended up believing some of what these psychics had to say, but none of it panned out. It's usually the same, and forgive me, I know this is a show that covers kind of the paranormal subject, and I love
we're
paranormal.
We're skeptics, don't worry.
Subject myself. I love it too, believe me. I spent a lot of my life actually doing a UFO thing, so.
Yeah.
But
we're skeptics.
It was nothing real.
Don't worry about
nothing
our feelings.
Real, what was that?
I said, we're skeptics. Don't worry about our feelings.
Oh. But, it was the same old stuff that you probably can call in one of those 800 numbers and have a psychic tell you. The near body of water, or I see the letter C, or something stupid like that. But none of it panned out. Nothing really that helped with the search other than diverting resources.
Right, right. Do we know if their stories coincided with one another's?
I did not. To be honest with you, I didn't even look into that aspect.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I was just curious about that one. Yeah, okay. Well, we are coming up on another break here. We are listening to me, Chauncey Allworth, and Karen Kittrick interview Sherlock Holmes. We're talking about the missing Dennis Lloyd Martin case. Now, there's a lot of a conspiracy pulled in here, of course, between the two Martin families meeting and also with everybody saying that it's possibly Bigfoot. And we're going to talk a little bit when we come back about why people gravitate towards these things and what they think was going on. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. Come on back with our guest, Sherlock Holmes.
purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. What shall we do about them? Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon to 2.
Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than the mainstream media soundbites.
Here on KCNR 1460 AM, we've got the experts on politics, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, property rights, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
The archives are always available online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join Aaron and Bill this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. We the People, brought to you by Team Power of Shasta Lake, your local Kubota and John Deere dealer. Call them at 530-226-9226. We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
This Chamber of Commerce Minute is brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning.
Becoming a member of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce is probably the smartest investment a local business can make. It would be impossible for a company on its own to duplicate the benefits of a chamber membership in the areas of legislative advocacy, workforce development, and economic development, not to mention all of the networking opportunities and business seminars offered. Join a committee, become an ambassador, attend a networking event, then watch your investment in business take off. Join today by calling 225-4433 and get connected.
This moment's been brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, professional cleaning services, 221-5868. Why not get the best?
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and we're listening to our guest, Sherlock Holmes, and we're talking about the missing Dennis Lloyd Martin. And so, you know, you had said that there was this association with Bigfoot, and I assume that a large part of the popularity of this is that they've taken Bigfoot and ran with it. Is that I'm just assuming this because they're a very rabid community, the Bigfoot community. You know, they're always looking for something. And as soon as the connection was made there, did they latch on pretty heavy?
Yeah, they could say that. And I'll go ahead and say this right now. I love Bigfoot. I did my third grade book report on Bigfoot. But Bigfoot has nothing to do with this case. So why they kind of inserted Bigfoot into this case and kind of ran with it, I can only assume that it had to do with the Key sighting, even though Harold Key never said, you know, Bigfoot did it. Although, listening to, I heard that promo you guys played, and Kara mentioned a good aspect. Bigfoot might have been framed, so I might need to go back into my entry and cover that aspect of maybe. I don't know.
I was worried about point. That, you know.
Totally. How unfair.
Right.
Well, yeah. A lot of Bigfoot researchers, you know, talk about how docile and non-threatening the creature really is.
Right.
And,
you know, don't
blame. It's weird that they latched onto it because.
Don't blame the cryptid. You know, they've had enough.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's weird that so many people would latch onto this when really that's a rare association. I mean, to, you know, I'm going to pick up this child and run off with it. And it I don't know. It is a weird yeah. It is a weird association, you know. And something
well, not only that, but like if you go farther into the story with the Key family, the Key family say, I'm not sure if it's the Key family. I don't remember right off. Yeah, it was the Key family. They said that the person that had supposedly the wild man that they saw running actually got into a white van and drove off. So that right there kind of discounts the Bigfoot part. And I know Bigfoot's kind of evolved. Now he teleports and the aliens drop him off now.
Right.
It's a little different from when I was writing a book report about him in third grade. But unless he drives cars now, too, I don't see Bigfoot doing that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got to tell you, you know, large, hairy man skulking around in the wilderness trying not to be seen that drives away in a van really sort of implies something other than Bigfoot to me.
Now, I like the way that he screamed ahead of time, too. He screamed, and then he was trying to hide, so I don't know.
You know, that implies potential abduction as being something more likely than Bigfoot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why Bigfoot got inserted. I had wrote my entry on my blog probably a while back, and I left it idle just because when I was researching it, I had to go into all those rabbit holes with old Bigfoot, and I got tired of it. So I left it idle, then I finished it up. But a big reason I kind of left it idle was the Bigfoot. But I got it finished up because my associate, Mai Watson, who does the Unsolved Appalachia site, she did a post on him, too, which is pretty good. You should check it out, too. But she doesn't cover Bigfoot either, but
so
but yeah.
What was the sort of association that people tried to make between the last name of Martin? Why any conspiracy there? What would that even be?
Well, you know, a lot of these conspiracy theories they're getting a little bit more I don't know what you call it.
I get it. They're getting like transcendental, like they're making time connections or something.
Well, they're getting a little more volume and a little more attention because of David Politis. And I like Politis. He does a lot of good work in terms of like documenting missing persons cases. But all he does is add flair to all of them.
I see.
Like all the details that we went over in terms of the man, the scream from the Key family. The part that he got into the car, he leaves a lot of that stuff out, and he leaves it open to interpretation. I know that Paulides is big on Bigfoot himself, so I think that might be part of the reason, but he tends to leave out a lot of the little things, and he wants to leave. He never says it himself that, you know, Bigfoot came and took the kid, but he kind of sways you in the direction with his narrative.
Right.
So a lot of it, in terms of this case, I think has to do with Paulides, which... he did do a lot of good things in this case. I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to attack the guy personally. He did go after and talk to, Dennis's, father, William, and he talked to, some of the searchers and so on. So he's done a lot of good work there, but, he leaves out a lot of little details, which would totally negate. I don't even know how Bigfoot got into this case to begin with, but he could take it out of the equation. But when you hear him tell the story, he leaves out a lot of those things.
So do you think we can give any credit to that sort of situation? I mean, so here we are, we're dealing with 69, you know, 40, 60 years later, that the associations that people have made with Bigfoot are somehow keeping the case alive and people interested, or... Do we owe any credit there, I guess?
I guess there could be an argument for it. I don't like it, but I guess there could be an argument made for that.
I get you.
Yeah.
I get you. All right. Well, we don't have too long until the end of the show here, so we wanted to ask you, what do you think happened? What is your take after reading all this stuff, and what do you think happened to this kid? What do you think happened?
He got lost and he perished of exposure somewhere in the woods.
You think so? You think he hid from researchers?
Yeah.
I mean, not researchers, from searchers and Just got lost.
Yeah, it's easy to miss things. Another part of this case, another aspect of this case was Dwight McCarter, which I mentioned before. He's one of the ones that did the searches. He said in 1985, one or two ginseng hunters were illegally hunting ginseng in that area, in the area of, I think it was Spence Field. And they said they came across a partial skull that looked to be of a young boy. And they said that they didn't report it because they didn't want to get prosecuted for illegally hunting on government land. So,
interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I couldn't find any news articles that could corroborate that, but Dwight McCarter seems like a really honest person. So if he says that's what they told him, I'll go with it. I find it kind of hard to believe myself. But he says that he knows the people. He's never told the actual names of the people, but he says that they're honest people. So he tends to believe them. But I think
I got to say, if you're going to be honest and you're going to be hunting anything illegal, ginseng is acceptable to me. So I find that that adds some credibility. It's not like they were poaching rhinos or anything, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm serious, you know. Yeah. That's like... You know, they weren't doing anything too bad, I don't think. But, all right, well, we're here at the end of the show, Sherlock. Can you remind our audience where they can find out more about this case and more about more of your missing cases that you look into?
My blog is crimeblogger1983.blogspot.com. I have a Facebook, Facebook, Sherlock Holmes 1983, and that Sherlock is spelled with a U, not an E. And I'm on Twitter, at Home Sherlock. And, I do have a podcast. We just started a podcast, me and my Watson, which is the Evidentiary Podcast. And we go over, cases. Right now the podcast is on iTunes, Podbeam, and Buzzsprout at the moment.
Sounds good. We're looking forward to checking it out. Well, I thank you very much for being on the show. This was a really interesting case and we really enjoyed having you on here. It was definitely something new for us and something we'd like to do again. So, you know, keep in touch.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. You two have a good day.
All right. You've been listening to Sherlock Holmes here on Radio Wasteland. Thanks for checking us out.
Hey you know The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.